Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record program number 736, Takiyah Sunrise, more on the piggyback coup in the Middle East. This program is being recorded on March 6th of the year 2011. Before I get into the main body of the broadcast, increasingly, the programs are such, the nature of the programs is such, or are such, the broadcasts are such that you're really going to have to use the website, I think, and the research materials available on it, particularly the descriptions of other programs, because the subject material is getting really dense. The subjects themselves are getting very complicated. So using the website and the various research materials on it, including some of the books that are available, I think is increasingly going to be important for a significant, for an adequate understanding of what I'm talking about here. I also want to thank those of you who have sent in articles and contributions and other things in the past. If you have sent in an article or a question and have not received a response, don't worry about it. I'd simply don't have time to answer correspondence by and large. You shouldn't take it personally. It's just a question of doing all the work, maintaining the website, and doing a day job. Just doesn't admit of that. I just don't have time. So please don't take it personally, and certainly don't feel in any way insulted, because it has nothing to do with you. It's just 24 and 7. There just isn't enough time to do what I do. I make time to do it, but anyway, don't take that personally if you haven't heard from me. Now, speaking of feedback, a couple of comments about For the Record 735, I think, of different nature, but I think they were both true. One fellow offered a bit of constructive criticism. It was criticism, and he described For the Record 735 as messy. And I think that's accurate. It was indeed a messy broadcast, and indeed the series, the reality is getting very messy. But I think for those of you who may have found For the Record 735 frustrating or difficult to handle, yes, I think the callers, the listeners' observation that it was messy was quite accurate. This is an extremely ambitious series, and so if subsequent programs appear messy, please use the descriptions for the programs. The description for the Record 735 has information that was not in the original broadcast, but I think that observation was quite accurate. It was a messy program and part of a messy series, quite frankly. Another listener also proffered some feedback on For the Record 735, and this person said it was one of the best programs I had ever done. I think that was true as well, and I think the series that I'm doing is extremely important. It is both some of the best material I've ever done, some of the most important material I've ever done, and it is also really messy. And, in as much as I put my pants on one leg at a time, if there are some bumps or some places that lack clarification in your opinion, please bear with me. I'm doing the best I can with what I think is not only an extremely complex reality, but a devastating one. And I think the future is being written, yea, verily, as we speak. And I think that it is going to be written in fire and tears and blood and death. To be perfectly frank about it. And I think that what is coming is the triumph of absolute evil. And I think that triumph is going to be in existence for a long time, probably as close to forever as we can conceive of it, barring some sort of significant interference. What I think is taking place in many ways is the culmination of a series of events of which the Second World War and the Cold War were but part. And I think that by the time these events have seen their conclusion, it is not only going to signal the end of the United States, but it is going to bring about the end of the Enlightenment itself and a subsequent dark age and an epoch of human suffering unequaled in human history as far as, or unequaled in recorded human history. I can appreciate that sounds like an awful tall glass to drink at one sitting. We're going to be sipping this unsavory brew for a period of time. But again, if this seems messy, it is messy. I think the criticism of 735 was quite valid. It is messy, and the other programs are going to be messy too. They're also some of the best things I've done. Now, talking about messy, we've been talking about WikiLeaks. Let me clarify the term piggyback coup. It may help to make things a little less messy for members of the audience. It's really a twofold reference. One, it refers to the fact that the uprising in Egypt, which successfully ousted Hosni Mubarak, appears to have followed very closely on the uprising in Tunisia. And it also, I believe, so in that sense, the Egyptian uprising was something of a piggyback operation on the Tunisian coup. I also think there is significant evidence. In fact, I'll go farther than that. I think there's overwhelming evidence that, in fact, this is an operation and that I think two elements of U.S. intelligence and State Department are involved with it, quite possibly an element of British intelligence as well. However, I think that those elements are, in fact, competing elements. In some of our conversations with John Loftus, in particular in For the Record program, I believe it was 704, but some of the ones in 700, we spoke with John Loftus and we spoke about the Obama administration as the last victim of World War II. And in our discussions with John Loftus and also in his recent book, America's Nazi Secret, we discussed with John the viewpoint that there are really two U.S. intelligence establishment, something that grew out of events at the end of, or really before the end of World War II, one of which is oriented not towards American interests, but towards transnational corporate interests, and that is inextricably linked with the forces of international fascism. And that is generally identified with the Republican Party, the other of which is more traditionally American, but it, of course, works with the economic establishment, and that is more generally identified with the Democratic Party. I believe that what is going on in the Middle East is, in fact, a U.S. Well, it's an operation certainly involving elements of U.S. intelligence, very possibly elements of British intelligence. It is being undertaken on behalf of the transnational corporate community. I think that the Democratic slash Obama faction of the State Department and CIA are going along with it. I believe that they are by and large doing so in the naive, and I think it is naive faith, that simply allowing democratic self-expression to Islamist governments in the Muslim world will lead to a peaceful parliamentary resolution of social conflicts there. It's a nice thought. I hope it turns out to be correct. I seriously doubt that it will. I think that sitting right in back of that is a transnational corporate CIA and State Department, which knows full well that the Muslim Brotherhood, which I believe will be the main beneficiary of what is taking place, is in fact corporatist, as Mussolini called his fascist system in their outlook, and that if ideally I think they would like to see some sort of nonviolent resolution of events. But as long as the Muslim Brotherhood is pro-business, and they are definitely that, I think they're quite satisfied to have the Brotherhood in power in the Muslim world. It will ensure corporatism. Plus, I think they see the Brotherhood as long-term vehicles against Russia, whose petroleum-producing areas are largely inhabited by Muslim populations, such as the Caucasus, and also China, which is increasingly becoming a large player on the global stage, is making a bid for many of the natural resources in the Middle East and Muslim world, including and especially oil. And time permitting, maybe in the next broadcast, we'll briefly examine these uprisings in the Middle East as the possibility of a U.S.-China proxy oil war, but more about that later. I think that piggyback coup, in addition to alluding to the fact that the Egyptian uprising piggybacked on the Tunisian uprising, also alludes to the fact that the democratic, quote, parliamentary, unquote, character of many of these social uprisings, I think may very well give rise to Islamic fascism and an ascension of the corporatist Muslim Brotherhood, which I believe is the focal point and the beneficiary of a major operation undertaken by both factions of U.S. intelligence. One of the mistaken and I think ultimately devastatingly tragic belief that things will work out just fine if we just allow them a little democracy. The other of which is perfectly willing to have an Islamic fascist entity in charge of much of the Earth Island, including the petroleum-producing areas. Now, another messy area, of course, in this entire analysis, which really began talking about WikiLeaks back in with For the Record 724 with Wiki of the Damned, that is that WikiLeaks itself, I think before we plunge into the piggyback coup and analysis of same, WikiLeaks itself is one of the strangest darn things I have ever seen. First of all, Julian Assange, as I've said before, is just a real strange bird. I mean, he'd make a very good James Bond villain. He'd be perfect for a character who came out of the old Outer Limits TV series, A Man from the Future, or from Atlantis, or from outer space, or from another dimension, or something along those lines. The guy just flat out looks strange. There are increasing, and I think the questions about Julian Assange's participation in the Hamilton Byrne cult loom larger and larger. When one studies that cult, it certainly appears to be a fascist mind control cult with some very strong Nazi leanings. They stress breeding and heredity as essential elements. And again, in 724, summing up very quickly, Assange himself had an encounter with this powerful cult, which certainly appears to be intelligence connected. They practice a brutal, rigorous form of mind control in which the children in the cult are sleep deprived, sensory deprived, and then given large doses of LSD, and then sexually molested and tortured while under LSD after having been sleep deprived and sensory deprived. And as you might imagine, that results in some pretty messed up little kids. The kids all have their hair dyed an identical platinum blonde slash white, and the kids have multiple identities and multiple passports, raising the very real question of just exactly who Julian Assange actually is. Some critics have claimed that he is living in luxury or has been living in luxury in South Africa. That would possibly be a different person using that name, or is the person that we're seeing not the real Julian Assange. In any event, the WikiLeaks phenomenon itself is strange. Not only is Julian Assange strange, not only are the questions about his participation in the Hamilton Byrne cult very strange. Again, he claims that he was fleeing from the cult, but a careful reading of the accounts of his encounter with them suggests that it is possible that, in fact, what was taking place was the creation of a legend. Supposedly, his mother was fleeing from the cult and kept going to the same places and telling people where she was going. So the cult kept catching up with her. Well, that could mean that she lacked resources or imagination, or it could be sort of like the creation of a legend, like all the people running around the South in the early 60s calling themselves Lee Harvey Oswald and doing things that would help to create the legend of Lee Harvey Oswald, the lone nut communist assassin of President Kennedy. Again, Julian Assange is a strange fellow. The WikiLeaks phenomenon itself is a very strange phenomenon. We're seeing all of these State Department memos, State Department cables, being bandied about by the press all over the world. One of the things I wonder about is, first of all, where is this stuff coming from? Are the State Department's computer banks so completely porous that any hacker can just move in and begin accessing State Department material? Or is this being deliberately leaked to WikiLeaks? I suspect that may be the case, and I suspect that the Bush/Rove faction of the State Department, again, the Republican/transnational/underground Reich faction of our intelligence system and State Department may very well be behind this. But simply on its surface, we're seeing all of these State Department memos being bandied about. One of the things that strikes me as a researcher is what sort of quality control is being exercised about these, quote, memos, unquote, or, quote, cables, unquote. Does The Guardian, do The New York Times, do these various publications have experts who can distinguish a skilled forgery of a State Department cable from an actual State Department cable? Perhaps, but I question that. I seriously doubt that WikiLeaks has such an expert. But again, I wonder about the vetting of this material. What sort of quality control exists? How can we tell that these memos, these cables, are actually real cables or skilled forgeries? And where is the stuff coming from? Who's leaking it? Or is it really possible for hackers to just access State Department computers this readily? If so, what other things are being accessed? Could be very interesting indeed. But I think one bit of information is really beginning to sort itself out, and that is just the real nature of Julian Assange. This past week, an imbroglio has exploded into the media. It's been eclipsed by events in the Middle East. But Julian Assange, in my opinion, is beginning to demonstrate his real character, and that real character is absolutely consistent with the Nazi viewpoint that is to be found in the associates of Carl Lundstrom, one of the financiers at the epicenter of what I call the pirate vortex. That's Pirate Bay, the pirate parties and associated elements. And as I've stressed before, the people who use Pirate Bay, the pirate parties, the anonymous folks, are anything but fascist. In fact, they would probably be described as anarcho-utopian, to coin a phrase. They're youthful idealists. They're also, however, being very cynically used, in my opinion, after having been very cynically and expertly misled. And they're being used by the likes of Karl Rove and Carl Lundstrom. I've also noted, in addition to the fact that WikiLeaks landed in the middle of the Lundstrom-financed pirate vortex, the fact that the fellow handling WikiLeaks operations vis-a-vis Russia, which is really important, is basically a celebratory anti-Semite and Holocaust denier named Joran Jermas, who writes under the name, quote, Israel Shamir, unquote. And his son, a fellow named Johannes Wallström, is handling WikiLeaks operations for Scandinavia, and he is of the same political stripe. Israel Shamir has stated publicly, quote, it is the duty of all good Christians and Muslims to deny the Holocaust, unquote. And he is part and parcel to the same Swedish anti-Semitic and Nazi milieu as Carl Lundstrom, as we've looked at in, among other programs, For the Record 732. Well, this has been the focal point of criticism from a number of elements. And this past week, Julian Assange, this Latter-day Saint who is the apple of the eye of the likes of Michael Moore and Daniel Ellsberg and is being oozed on by the liberals and progressives around much of the world, Julian Assange has begun to reveal his true character, in my opinion. Article from the New York Times of March 1st of 2011. Report says Assange complains of Jewish smear campaign by Ravi Somaya. It reads in part, he, Assange, was especially angry about a private eye report that Israel Shamir, an Assange associate in Russia, was a Holocaust denier. Mr. Assange complained that the article was part of a campaign by Jewish reporters in London to smear WikiLeaks. A lawyer for Mr. Assange could not immediately be reached for comment, but in a statement later released on the WikiLeaks Twitter feed, Mr. Assange said Mr. Hislop had, quote, distorted, invented, or misremembered almost every significant claim and phrase, unquote. The Private Eye article quoted Mr. Assange as saying the conspiracy was led by The Guardian, that's the British Guardian, and included the newspaper's editor Alan Rusbridger and investigations editor David Lee, as well as John Kampfner, a prominent London journalist who recently reviewed two books about WikiLeaks for the Sunday Times of London. When Mr. Hislop pointed out that Mr. Rusbridger was not Jewish, Mr. Assange countered that The Guardian's editor was, quote, sort of Jewish, unquote, because he and Mr. Lee, who was Jewish, were brothers-in-law. Well, this again, this is the response that Julian Assange issued to the criticism of his having selected, you know, again, an overt, celebratory anti-Semite and Holocaust denier, and Joran Jermas, a.k.a. Israel Shamir, again, is a celebratory Holocaust denier. He is also fiercely anti-Israel and pro-Palestinian. And it's interesting that he's been handling WikiLeaks operations vis-a-vis Russia because it was disclosure of the alleged State Department cables criticizing the Russian government that led to a fairly acerbic response on the part of Mr. Putin and the remarkable experience of seeing Vladimir Putin appearing on Larry King in order to respond to the criticism. Again, these are strange times, are they not, folks? We got WikiLeaks, we got State Department cables being used for toilet paper all over the world in the bathrooms of just about every newspaper and blog outfit and around the world. And we've got Vladimir Putin appearing on Larry King, apparently because he knows that Larry King isn't going to ask him any tough questions. But these are very strange times indeed. Back to Julian Assange. Again, rather than take stock of the criticism, he has defended Israel Shamir and claimed that the negative publicity that WikiLeaks has gotten from hiring Shamir and his son to handle very sensitive positions for WikiLeaks, that this is part of a, quote, Jewish conspiracy, unquote. When you hear that kind of BS, you know, the Jewish conspiracy stuff, That should lead you to sniffing the air, folks, because that is how Nazis talk. And if you study, by the way, the Ann Hamilton Byrne cult, they really do give evidence of being sort of a quasi-Nazi cult, perhaps some sort of British Commonwealth intelligence Nazi outfit. I don't know past a point. But again, I think they take a look at the picture on the front page of the SpitfireList.com website and take a look at a picture of a member of the Ann Hamilton Byrne cult. There is one of them who looks very much like Julian Assange. Again, not being an expert in photo analysis, I can't state without qualification that it is. But there certainly is a distinct resemblance, and if there is anyone out there who has some real skills in photo analysis, I would certainly appreciate their assistance in helping to determine whether or not that really is Julian Assange as a boy. And for providing depth for the discussion of Julian Assange and the Hamilton Byrne cult, do look at the picture that's linked, the post that's linked on the front page of the SpitfireList.com website. Now, transitioning to events in the Middle East from discussion of WikiLeaks and Julian Assange and his defense of his hiring of a couple of Holocaust deniers and Nazi fellow travelers to handle sensitive positions for WikiLeaks. He blames that on an international Jewish conspiracy. One of the things that emerged and in the uprisings and the turmoil that's taking place in the Middle East was the leak by WikiLeaks and then of supposedly WikiLeaks using an Al Jazeera, Al Jazeera using a WikiLeaks leaked document that talked about the negotiations that had taken place between the Palestinian Authority and Israel. And both the spokespersons for the Palestinian Authority and spokespersons for Israel are claiming that what was actually broadcast on Al Jazeera, which, as we've seen in past broadcasts, is heavily influenced by the Muslim Brotherhood, what they're claiming is that what was released by Al Jazeera or what may have been released, doctored by WikiLeaks in leaking it to Al Jazeera, was fundamentally incorrect. Both the Israeli and Palestinian Authority spokespersons are claiming that the released information is fundamentally inaccurate in that it distorts what was actually taking place. But the nature of the leak is such that it makes the Palestinian Authority appear to have completely capitulated to Israeli demands, thereby discrediting the Palestinian Authority in the eyes of many Palestinians and Arabs, and lending strength and support to Hamas, which is the Palestinian branch of the Muslim Brotherhood, and whose charter we have read in the past. I think looking at this report against the background of Al Jazeera's deep involvement with the Muslim Brotherhood, and also against the background of the significant involvement of WikiLeaks with Holocaust deniers, anti-Semites, and Nazi fellow travelers, the following is more than a little interesting, and also the effect that this may have on Arab public opinion in the wake of these uprisings should, it's something we're going to ponder. This is from the San Francisco Chronicle of January 25th of 2011. It's an AP story by Ben Hubbard and Mohammed Daragmeh. It's from Ramallah in the West Bank. It's headline, Middle East, Palestinians slam Al Jazeera over disputed report. It reads in part, a senior Palestinian official condemned Qatar-based Al Jazeera on Monday, and a crowd of protesters vandalized the satellite channel's West Bank headquarters after it reported on leaked documents that claimed Palestinian leaders offered large concessions in peace talks with Israel in 2008. The angry outburst followed the airing late Sunday of what Al Jazeera said were internal Palestinian documents showing that Palestinian leaders had offered broad concessions on two of the thorniest issues in negotiations with Israel, Jerusalem and the fate of Palestinian refugees. Yasser Abed Rabo, a top aide to Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas, told reporters Monday that the news network engaged in media games to trick and mislead the simple citizen. He angrily accused the Gulf state of Qatar, which bankrolls the station, of damaging Palestinian interests. Quote, what Al Jazeera is doing today is an attempt to distort the national position of the Palestinian leadership, he said. Abed Rabo said the report on the so-called Palestine Papers relied on out-of-context quotes, insinuations, and outright fabrications. Comparing the program to WikiLeaks, which he said merely publishes leaked documents, he said Al Jazeera could, quote, draw conclusions, counterfeit documents, and change texts, cut a word here and there, and put together images of people with no relationship to negotiations, unquote. I would suggest, how does anybody know that WikiLeaks doesn't do the same thing? And also, although it's not in this account, I've seen allegations that, in fact, these Palestinian papers came from WikiLeaks. That is not in this article. Let's put a question mark by that. I'll see if I can find firmer documentation for that. But we'll put a question mark beside that for the time being. But I would suggest that exactly that same question should be asked about WikiLeaks. I don't doubt that at least some of that material is genuine, but where is it coming from? And what sort of quality control process is being exercised here? Continuing, Abed Robo also took aim at the Emir of Qatar, calling the program a political campaign of the first degree, coming from a political decision at the highest level from our brother in Qatar. The Qatari government bankrolled Al Jazeera when it began in 1996 and is believed to still fund the station. And as we looked at, and among other programs, the description, or the For the Record 735 and the description, in fact, there is a profound relationship between Al Jazeera and the Muslim Brotherhood. And with the popular uprisings taking place in the Middle East, it will be interesting to see what happens vis-a-vis the whole situation in terms of Arab-Israeli relations. I am not in the least little bit optimistic in the fact that the right wing is in political power in Israel with Benjamin Netanyahu, the heir to the Likud fascists in the Zionist movement, and with Avigdor Lieberman, an ultra-nationalist with a strong political contingent on his side. I don't think, let's just say I'm not optimistic at all. I think the very worst elements are already in power in Israel, although that is potentially subject to change if the parliamentary coalition there dissolves. And it looks to me like the very worst elements are going to be coming to power in the Middle East, too. Hopefully not. Hopefully this will be a genuine democratic manifestation, but I am not optimistic. And one of the reasons I'm not optimistic was voiced by Thomas Friedman in a column that was syndicated from the New York Times. The San Jose Mercury News of February 24th carried this column. It's called Arab World's Transition to Democracy, No Picnic. It reads in part, a Middle East quarterly report in the fall of 2002 detailed the key evidence. Gross domestic product of the entire Arab world combined was less than that of Spain. Per capita, and by the way, this from a group of people that have control of the greatest source of wealth and power in the industrialized world, oil. Per capita expenditure on education in Arab countries dropped from 20% of that industrialized countries in 1980 to 10 in the mid-1990s. In terms of the number of scientific papers per unit of population, the average output of the Arab world per million inhabitants was roughly 2% of that of, or roughly 2% of that of an industrialized country. When the report was compiled, the Arab world translated about 330 books annually, one-fifth of the number that was translated into Greek. Out of seven world regions, the Arab countries had the lowest freedom score in the late 1990s in the rankings of Freedom House. Remember Freedom House, we're going to come back to that. At the dawn of the 21st century, the Arab world had more than 60 million illiterate adults, the majority of whom were women. Yemen could be the first country in the world to run out of water within 10 years. Oh, that is going to be a lot of fun. But again, noting that the 22 Arab countries, despite the fact that they control effectively the greatest source of wealth and power in the industrialized world, had a combined gross domestic product less than that of Spain. And that basically, these sorts of things, and as Friedman has noted, the lid is being blown off an entire region with frail institutions, scant civil society, and virtually no democratic traditions or culture of innovation. Yes, indeed, and we're going to see what happens with that, and we're going to see what happens with elements like Al Jazeera and the Muslim Brotherhood stirring up the pot, perhaps with a generous assist from WikiLeaks. However, we're going to be doing that over a considerable period of time, starting in Side 2, because this concludes Side 1 of For the Record program number 736, Takiya Sunrise. More on the piggyback coup in the Middle East. This program is being recorded on March 6th of the year 2011. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.